What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Da 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
It's showtime.
Hello and welcome to another fabulous edition of the Mad About Movies podcast. My name is Brian Gill and I am joined by my beautiful, wonderful, illustrious co-hosts Kent and Richard. How are you boys?
I'm good. Fabulous and beautiful are subjective terms though, right?
That's how I feel about both of you. Yeah. So
we are the fabulous Baker boys and that'll come in later.
Heyo, I like
when I go on a nice tangent on Jeff Bridges.
No idea what you're talking about right now.
You don't know the Fabulous Baker Boys? You ever seen that movie? Michelle Pfeiffer, Bo and Jeff Bridges, they're piano players.
It's a classic, Kento.
No, I have not.
It's definitely worth your time. Head over to
actually, it's a very good movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Peak Michelle Pfeiffer.
It is. So we're here tonight. We're going to be talking a little bit later. Richard and I, anyway, are going to be talking about Bad Times at the El Royale. Very interesting Drew Goddard movie. So if you're here for that, stick around till about the middle of this episode and we'll start the review portion. We'll be joined by a guest to do that. But before we start, we always like to kick our episodes off each week with a little movie news, rumors, and rumblings to kind of get us through the first 30 minutes of this show to kind of just touch on what's new in Hollywood. What's
gotta
going on
tune.
In this?
Gotta stay hit.
That's right. This old industry that we love. This industry we call show business.
I was going to say, by the industry, you of course mean the business.
Yes, exactly. I have three very important news items that I would like to talk with you fellows about today. Let's start
Ryan,
with...
Ryan, if I must interrupt, I want to throw a little teaser out here.
Do it. Love teasers.
I'm going to tease a big show announcement next week.
Next week, man. I'm so excited for this big show announcement. I don't know what it is, I'm excited about it.
Wait, am I getting fired?
Yeah.
We're finally replacing you with Adrian.
Yeah, next to us getting a restraining order from Wondery, this is the second biggest announcement in the history of the show. And it's happening next week. And we were going to do it this week, but we wanted to wait a week until everything was all confirmed and good.
Right, right.
And so that will be happening next episode. So stay tuned for that. Yeah. And good times happening at the Mad About Movies.
It's awesome.
Mad About Movies in space.
It was a Bad Times at the El Royale joke, Richard. Come on.
I stepped on it. I'm sorry.
I liked it.
But
I liked it.
I'm excited. Yeah. And
very big stuff around here.
Big announcement next week. So that's the teaser.
Very exciting. Very exciting. So come back next week. We'll be talking about, I believe, Bohemian Rhapsody will be our episode next week. So check out that episode in a week or so and get that awesome, cool news that we're very excited about.
But which verse of Bohemian Rhapsody will be the whole song? It's like an 8-minute song. I don't know how many.
Can we do our review in like that voice? Can we do the singing?
A little silhouette. Yes.
Rami
Malek in this role.
Brian Singer is a pretty creepy guy. Go.
I like it. I'm gonna work on that. I'll write a script for us to do.
You know,
I love.
Yeah,
Queen,
it's probably best
way.
You write it because I can go.
No,
we'll release Richard's cut on Patreon. So look out for that.
Look out, Kevin Spacey.
So, okay, I have three very important movie news items. I'm excited to talk about them all with you, and I always hope that I'm breaking news to at least one of you. So we'll see how this goes. Let's start with the least interesting piece of movie news, but should make for good content. So Aaron Sorkin is writing and directing a movie about the Chicago Seven, which is a very famous group of activists in, I believe, 1968 that were tried and prosecuted for.
It's been in the works for a long time.
Right? It has. It used to be a Spielberg project at some point. It was like Spielberg and Will Smith a few years ago, and it's kind of been passed around.
The Abbey oh gosh, the Chicago Seven.
Abbey Road.
I want to say Abbey Cornish for some reason, which is, it's Abbey Hoffman. He wrote Steal This Book, which is, you guys have, is always faced out on my shelf, mm-hmm. and everyone mm-hmm. always goes, I'm gonna steal it. And I always go, yeah, it's the point. You can take it, and they never do. Shows my hippie credibility, yeah. though.
Bunch of losers.
But I think Sacha Baron Cohen was going to play him for a long time in the Spielberg one, too.
Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen is still attached to play in this. I'm not
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it'll be Abbey Hoffman because he looks okay. slow. Yeah.
The leader of the Chicago 7 activists now is rumored to be, I believe this has gone beyond rumored, it is now fact. Again, Aaron Sorkin, right, directing. The lead in this movie will be Eddie Redmayne, they've announced today.
Not Mal. So I guess he's playing... Yeah.
Grindelwald or Newt Gingrich or whoever it is.
Gosh, I'm so excited for Fantastic Beasts and making Kent.
I actually came to the realization the other day because I have PlayStation View now. Like I have had it for the past, like ever since the football season started. So I invested in that for the season and smart. I'm actually having to watch commercials now. Mm-hmm. And that's a beating. I forgot about that. I stopped doing that for about 2 years and then, So saw the trailer for that, and then the realization of like, oh man, we probably actually have to review that movie came onto me, and I was immediately turned off my TV and went into my room and cried. So
we've got a good guest lined up for that one. I don't know if we talked to you about this, Kent. Richard and I want to do the Harry Potter movies next year, like one a month for 8 months. Mm-hmm. And we want you to watch and join us in review of said movies. I think that'd be a big hit with the listener. And I actually think you would enjoy the movies.
I think I would too. I have nothing against the movies. I have not seen them. That's it. That's it. I'm sure they're fine and I would like them. And the genre is right up my alley and all that. I just haven't gotten around to it. So yeah,
I got you.
I'm excited.
Well, there's a tease for starting 3 months from now. Look forward to that, listener. Eddie Redmayne will be playing the lead in a Sorkin movie, which seems very odd to me because I can never understand anything that he says on screen. He's so quiet all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are normally pretty action-oriented scripts.
Right, yeah. It's basically Michael Bay, as I've always... The poor man's Michael Bay, Aaron Sorkin. That was kind of a bummer. I'm excited for Chicago 7. I've been looking forward to that story coming to the screen. I don't like Eddie Redmayne
very
much.
Sorkin is directing.
That's kind of a bummer. He's writing, directing, yes, just like Molly's
Jessica's
game.
Game or Molly's Game.
Molly's Game, yeah.
Jessica Chastain's in it. That's why I said
right. Sorry. Right. So that's what's headed our way. I assume this shoots sometime next year, and then I don't think it's coming out next year. I think it's a 2020 release. But anyway, that's the big Aaron Sorkin news of the day, and I enjoyed all of the internet talking about how Eddie Redmayne is very quiet and that dialogue will be very strange coming off of his lips. Second news item. I'm super pumped about this. Super pumped. I know Richard is too. I hope you are.
I know what you're referring to.
So I'm so excited.
I know
about
what you're
this.
Referring to. The fact that Mr. Feeney beat off a robber in at his house at age 91.
Careful.
He scared off. He scared,
scared
off.
Scared
off
a robber.
Yeah,
the other thing
that
is
was cool.
Yeah. Yes. Let's go there. Sure. Let's talk that. First of all, all news outlets, how dare you start off a tweet about our dear beloved Mr. Feeney, William Daniels, by saying breaking William Daniels 91 ... Like immediately your first thought is, oh no, Mr. Feeney died. This is the worst day.
Oh, I seriously started to read it and I was about to cry. And then it's
yes, same here. Same
punches
here.
Punches a robber in the face.
I was so mad.
Like, oh.
I was so mad. I was driving, thankfully, and a friend, and I never check my phone while driving ever. It's a big thing that I'm all about. I never look at my phone. I didn't see a friend texted me. I didn't see his initial text because it was, holy crap, Mr. Feeney died. And then by the time I actually looked at the text, he had recanted his fake news, false story and said, no, it's just, sorry, I misread. It's not. And I was like, dude, you can't do that. You can't put that out there. But yes, several news outlets reported that horribly. But yes, Mr. Feeney, William Daniels.
Age 91.
Should be,
so
age 91 should be American treasure. We need to make him American treasure. He apparently confronted and scared off a robber attempting to burglarize his home this morning and sent the police chasing after him.
That you get American treasure status just for that.
Yeah. If you're 91 and you're chasing dudes off after having given us 7 years of lectures and helping us get through teenage years. I feel like that automatically qualifies you for American Treasure status. So yes. I'm willing to vote him in.
I knew that we had to bring that up on the show. We could not.
Yeah.
Anything Boy Meets World is required to be discussed.
Got to bring that up. Got to bring that up. And our friend Bryce tweeted that he was pretty sure the robber was Linda Cardellini, which of course.
Oh, she has a successful career. What's Danielle Fischel up to, by the way? Topanga. You know her? What's
just
she up to?
Occupying my heart. How dare you? How dare you speak nicely of Linda Cardellini? She knows what she did. We'll never forgive her for that. And, you know, I think that's well deserved. I think it's well deserved. So shout out to news outlets that reported this horribly and made us think that Mr. Feeney died and crushed all of
instant our childhood clickbait
dreams.
For every millennial. There. All right, moving
when
on.
When that does happen, Richard and I have talked about this previously. We will hold a wake for Mr. Feeney, hopefully in 30 years. So get ready for that. Last bit of movie news. I'm super pumped about this. I'm excited to get your thoughts on this because Richard and I have talked about it ad nauseum over the last few weeks. Are you familiar with John McAfee, the guy who created McAfee Security Systems? You know how crazy he is and everything.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
Lives in
former
the jungle.
Presidential candidate.
Right? John McAfee. Yeah.
Actually, one of the coolest ads of the 26 campaign was his. It was really good, I thought.
Definitely. If you don't know who he is,
software tycoon.
He's a software tycoon. He created McAfee Security. That if you don't have Norton antivirus, you probably have McAfee antivirus. When antivirus is antivirus still a thing? I don't know. But That was the big one for a while, or the second biggest one for a while. Anyway, he's super crazy. And if you don't know his story, you need to Google him and just see how he's like living in the jungles and non-extradition countries and stuff like that. He's insane. They're making a movie about his life because it is such a crazy life. And American Treasure Michael Keaton is going to play John McAfee in this movie. And I could not be more excited about that.
Gosh. Who's writing it?
That I am not sure about. I'll look it up.
I know, yeah. I should know this. I'm sorry, Brian.
That's exciting, regardless. The Keaton
Assange
continues.
Seth Rogen's in it, too.
Is he?
Oh, it's Glenn Ficarra and John, the Bad Santa Bros.
Yeah, Crazy Stupid Love guys.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's
very
exciting.
Interesting.
So
very
is he going to go into, didn't he go into like exile or like run from the police and he moved to Mexico or something?
Yeah, he's in,
Bolivia?
This is the tagline. Belize. Yeah, this is the tagline.
Belize,
for the movies.
There you go.
The story of software engineer and former NASA programmer John McAfee, who gained financial success with his antivirus software, then ran into trouble with the law after selling his company and moving to Belize. And he's insane. His tweets are insane. Everything about him is insane.
Yeah,
I can't wait to see Keaton play this.
He had this great tweet the other day about how everything, he chugged a bottle of like $1 wine and then chugged a bottle of $500 wine. He's like, the $1 wine's better. And then followed it up with like, everything cheaper is better. The bad wine's the best. The cheap cigars are the best. McDonald's is better than great filet mignon and all the Taiwan or Thailand prostitutes are way the best and they only cost $10. It was like, I know where you stand, bro.
Good. Yes. Right. It's quite the divergence there. I like it. But
did we talk about just maybe the last thing we talk about? Did we ever talk about the canceled Roger Ailes movie with John Lithgow as Roger?
Yeah.
Ailes?
I don't think it's canceled anymore. I think it's,
or it's moved or something.
Yeah.
It was going to be with Annapurna, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's...
Yeah, that was the issue.
With somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's on... It's for
There's
sale,
also a Roger Ailes Showtime miniseries, which I think would probably be a better way to go. Yeah. And that's based off the really great Roger Ailes book. The movie's not.
Okay.
But the show is based off Loudest Voice in the Room, which if you're interested in like either political or modern media culture, I could not recommend that book higher. It's incredibly interesting. Like... That's one of the best books I read last year. So I'm in on this as a project. It's more interesting than you would think, but I don't know about the movie.
Mm. They were going to have, or are still going to have, Charlize play Megyn Kelly, and that seems like pretty good casting.
Yep.
In
blackface, though, and I don't agree with that.
A little too soon.
Yeah, I thought too soon. They're like, but she's from, you know, she's from Africa, and it's like, that's still not cool, guys. Yeah.
That's a technicality.
Yeah. Wow. I think I saw today that Megyn Kelly got cut out of the Showtime series.
So just don't get involved with the Today Show if you want a career. That's the...
I know.
Right.
I know.
Yeah. Or unless you're Hoda.
Or do, but don't act terribly. Right. That's another...
Don't
say racist things or have...
Well, she was used to saying that kind of stuff on Fox News, and everyone was good with it.
Yeah, good job. And at like 10 in the morning, too.
Right.
It's like, we don't really want to like make old people scared at 10 a.m. Kind of want to let them ease into their day.
She's got a strange career.
I always thought a really funny... Speaking of Today's Show, I sent this to Brian, but I don't know not to you, Kent. If SNL had good writers, a funny sketch would be whatever the new guy is on. He's married to Lindsay Zarniak, and I always forget his name. He's really good, the new guy on the Today Show.
That jerk.
But they give him
Carson Daly.
No,
Carson's great, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I'm a big Carson Daly fan.
Like
the guy's a
he
pro.
Does not get enough credit for just being good at his job. You know,
I know. No, I'm totally with you, man. Totally with you. Big Carson Daly guy. Anyway, a great sketch would be, welcome to Today Show. We're going to give you this office, and you slowly realize that it's Craig Melvin. This is the gentleman's name. He's great. He's really good at his job. But and you slowly realize he keeps accidentally like hitting buttons and stuff, and weird, creepy stuff keeps... It's basically like a Saw movie of an office. Because realize it's Matt Lauer's old office. That would be a hilarious sketch. Yeah. And he's like, I dialed 9 on the phone and now I'm locked at my desk. I don't know what to do. And they're like,
would be a great SNL bit. Yeah. They get locked in the office and they're like, somebody has to saw their something off, you know, or whatever to get out. Walking down the hall at NBC. It's like, oh, whose office is... Oh, what? That's so... All right. Well, have fun talking El Royale, guys. I'm going to see it soon. Schedule hasn't worked out for me to see it yet. Hopefully I see it and it makes it onto my top 10.
I'm excited for you to watch it. I think it's up your alley. So you'll enjoy it when you get a
big
chance.
Big Goddard guy. So
yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't let me down.
Well cool. Well, we're going to take a little break and then we're going to kick off the show as we continually try to do. We'll welcome in a guest.
That's the announcement. Spoiler.
Right. And we'll talk Bad Times at the El Royale.
We replaced Kent with Alexa.
Perfect. Perfect. So stick around for that. All right. Well, we've kicked Kent out of not just this episode, but for good, I think, Richard.
I killed him. He's dead.
Oh man, I knew I should have been a little clearer when I said to take care of
him. No, that guy is dead. So you said take care of him and you winked. And I thought I understood what you meant. But yeah, no, he's super dead.
All right. Well, we'll figure out what to do with J. Daniel Catalyst. But anyway, we got rid of Kent. He's out.
I'll watch. I'll take care of him.
All right,
I
good deal. Olive needs a buddy. I like it. So we got rid of Kent. We're welcoming in our good friend, Megyn. Megyn, how you doing?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for being here. Megyn is from the... Tell me the name of your podcast again. I want to make sure.
On the Download.
On the Download podcast. Nice. Yes, we like that. We like that. So welcome. Megan's been on the show several times before, and I'm sure we'll be on several times again. So she's filling in for Kent on last minute tonight, and we really appreciate that. Megyn, I'm going to start with you and let you get going on Bad Times at the El Royale, the Drew Goddard directed thriller horror movie sort of thing that was very interesting. You saw this a while back, I think. You saw this at like a film festival or something, and I want to get your general thoughts and all that good stuff, and then we'll move into spoilers later.
Yes, so I really liked this movie, but I was, after I had seen the trailer at the beginning, or, you know, a while back, I was really excited for it because I thought I could really love it. On paper, it has kind of everything that I like, and I was hoping it would be this year's, like, Baby Driver, which kind of came out of nowhere to me last year, so I was really excited about that. But and I think Drew Goddard is a really interesting filmmaker, and I was really looking forward to the trailer and had a lot of things I was interested in, like you know, the singing was awesome, and I kind of like the aesthetic with the neon lights, and then Chris Hemsworth as a cult leader. I mean, that's a draw for me.
we're all members of that cult, I think, actually. Yes. In real life.
That's how
early,
I felt.
Early and often.
I was like, oh well, I mean, I understand how you could get pulled into this, but I don't know how long I'd hang out, but I understand the immediate appeal.
Sure. We've all been there. That's fine.
I think I ended up, I liked it. I didn't love it as much as I think I could have. And no, I don't want to get too deep into spoilers, but I think it kind of ended up being a little too much of a slow burn for me. And I was, based on, you know, Cabin in the Woods, I think I might've just had some high expectations about where it was kind of going.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Sense. Yeah, that's fair. I'm in the same boat. I thought this trailer, this is one of my three or four favorite trailers of the year. I thought it was just a fantastic first glance and had all these elements that I was very excited about. And I love this cast. I don't love Cabin in the Woods. I'm not a horror guy to begin with. And I really like the concept of that movie and what it was trying to do. I think it just was sold to me so hard before I actually saw it that I had just talked myself into, this is going to be like the transcendent horror movie that is going to change my whole view on the genre, and it just didn't quite, it did not do that for me. But I love Goddard's writing, and I think he is, we've talked about this before, Richard, where I wish I could come think of a great example, but there are directors and writers and showrunners and stuff that that will say, I have said several times, like, man, I'm not sure that this is the thing, but I feel like this guy or this girl at some point they're going to make like a transcendent, great, great movie. And Drew Goddard's one of those. Like, he's such a good writer. He's done exquisite work on TV. And then, you know, the script for The Martian is a great script and an excellent use of source material to, you know, adapt that to the screen. So, like, I feel like he is going to make a great, great, great movie at some point. And I really thought this was going to be it. It's not. I really like the movie. I'm going to get it a high grade. It's going to be something I think that's going to be worth considering at the end of the year for my personal top 10, but it's not like a shoe-in top 5 great movie that I was hoping it would be and that the trailer kind of sold me on going in. But I love this cast, and I love, gosh, I love the setting, and I love the usage of the cast, which is, you know, not always it's not that anybody can assemble a great cast, but I think it's a lot easier to get a great cast than it is to get the great cast and then use them correctly and do the right stuff with them. And I'm very impressed with what he did here. But you're right, Megan. There are some slow burn elements that don't necessarily work, and it does kind of stretch in places. And there's at least one storyline that I didn't really care about, wasn't very invested in, and that kind of took away from it, since it is such a segmented character by character sort of storytelling stand, you know, that kind of let me slide away from the movie in some places. So really, really dig it, but I can't say that I loved it, and I'm slightly disappointed by that, because I thought this was going to be the movie for me this year based on that trailer. So I saw this like 3 weeks ago. I know you saw it several weeks ago too, Megan. Richard, give us your general thoughts. I think you probably have seen this more recently than either of us. But
I never saw it. Never saw it. Here to hang. Kind of here. I saw it. Oh, gosh. I don't know, 8 or 9 days ago, probably. Mm-hmm. So more recent than you you lot. But it's same with you, Brian, kind of similar. It's like, this is a lot of people I'm interested in, you know, how I feel about A-Team Hemsworth. I'm pretty much in on him. Mm-hmm. We loved Rush. So he can do things outside of Thor, even though everything else has been terrible, but he was the best part of Ghostbusters, so he's got that going for him.
I'm not familiar with that movie. Are you talking about Answer the Call? Just to be clear, I want to make sure.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
obviously.
Right, good deal.
Yep, obviously,
because he was like -2 when Ghostbusters came out. Just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yeah, no, you're right, and far in a far distant land. Yeah, it was. It is that thing of like that's the trailer was magnificent and mesmerized, being and really unique and different. And you're going, okay, this is going to be something that's really interesting. And then, you know, the movie comes out and it was really interesting. I mean, it lived up to, if the trailer hadn't been a triple plus, this movie lives up to a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't live up to that really interesting trailer. It's also the thing that some mysterious movies have, where the mystery is more interesting than the unveiling of said mystery.
Sure.
So it suffers from that a little bit too, but still a very good movie and something that's original. And you said, Megan, I you know, Goddard's got something really interesting going here, and you're right as well, Brian, that he's going to make a really great film at some point. He definitely has all the tools of which to do so as a writer. And this movie, the best thing about it was very well shot. So it kind of, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of brought everything in. So, it's weird to think of, it's something that if I'd never seen a trailer on it, I would be thrilled with it, but having seen that great trailer, I'm like disappointed, but that's not the right word. If that mm-hmm. makes sense. So.
Sure. No, I'm right there with you. The setting is really cool. I like, one of the things I like in the trailer is you're not totally sure what year this is in. Like, you can kind of guess, you think maybe it's kind of old school, but I wasn't sure. If I would have gone into the movie a couple weeks ago and then it was like 2018, I would have been like, yeah, okay, sure. I don't know, it kind of has a timeless feel to that trailer and leaves you to guess what's coming, and I like that a lot. But yeah, anyway, great trailer, and let's go ahead and just go all in on spoilers at this point. Bad Times at the El Royale, if you haven't seen it yet, you can turn off now, come back for weekly recommends. But I would definitely say go see the movie, check it out. It's worth seeing, and I feel like it's worth seeing in a theater if you can get to it before it's out, because it kind of has cinematic feel to it that I'm not sure is going to quite come across on demand or DVD or whatever. But let's go full spoilers here. Is there, Megan, I'll start with you. Is there a storyline within this that you cared about more than the rest? Is there a storyline you weren't as interested in? What, because it is told in individual, I don't know, narrative where you jump from one character to the next, which I like when that's done. It's very cool. But anyway, one that jumped out at you is a positive, or one that you didn't care for?
Yes. So I was interested at the beginning. I think kind of right off the bat, the two main ones are Jeff Bridges and then John Hamm. Mm-hmm. And I was all in on John Hamm at that point, just because I love John Hamm. Yeah. He's doing the weirdest accent and kind of putting on kind of a crazy character. And I was like, okay, I got to see where this goes. But then that storyline is cut pretty short. And then after that, I was, I think I really liked, so Cynthia Erivo, I think, is the singer. And yeah. So I really liked every time she was singing. And so there were a few scenes where she had some a cappella singing, but other than that, I was less invested in the Bridges storyline. And I think that's because I knew that Dakota Johnson was going to be a part of the Hemsworth storyline. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was just like, for the whole first half, I was like, I know that this is where that's headed. So mm-hmm. I kind of want to see how that comes in.
Sure. That's fair. Richard, is there one of these that jumps out as more interesting to you or less interesting, or
all of them, but Dakota Johnson, but yeah,
that's where I was too, man. I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't like her, but I was,
I like her.
I thought she was good in this movie. Coming in, she was definitely the low spot for me as far as like my anticipation for the cast. So I thought she was good. I didn't really care about her storyline because to your point, Megan, like I knew that she was connected to Hemsworth, and I just, every minute with her on screen was like, okay, but when's Hemsworth getting here? Because that's my dude.
I was really looking forward to Hemsworth. I was spending a lot of time on that, I think.
It's a great build to that character arriving without really, I don't know how to put that. There's definitely pointer scenes, and you definitely know it's coming just based on the trailer. But kind of, I felt like Goddard did a really good job of kind of just letting that, I don't know, there's like a natural build. Like you could feel it of at some point this dude's showing up and things are going to get wild. And that's
And it wasn't awesome. Very heavy handed. Like yes. they didn't yes. have to kind of like really show overtly how kind of manipulative and creepy he was. Mm-hmm. I mean, he definitely mm-hmm. was, but you're just kind of, as the audience, know how charismatic he is. So you're like, well, this is going to be a nightmare.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. But I'm with you, Richard. Her storyline was not, I wasn't super invested when she was on screen as I was in the rest. RB, you and I, Megan, you as well. We're all big John Hamm fans. I love when John Hamm is at his kind of grittiest and seediest in a way. Like I love mm-hmm. when he really digs into the darker aspects of his persona or his on-screen persona, because he's so good at it, and he's menacingly handsome, and just, I don't know, like Baby Driver, when he gets all drugged up and angry and stubbly and stuff, is just I'm all in. So I like this. Richard, surprise you a little when he bites the bullet very early on. I was a little
a little bit, then I was like kind of understanding why he wasn't marketed more in the movie. Like, oh, sure. Got it.
Right.
When the marketing made sense, because he's kind of this ancillary person in the background of some of the trailers, and then it's made clear as to why.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Well done on that front. I can't remember which one of you said it. There is a little bit more of a, I think it was you, Richard. There's kind of a mystery box element to this, of like wanting to discover why all these people are here, what their connection is, if they have a connection, and how this place, this setting, plays into all of their lives and how that's going to come to fruition. Did you feel like, you kind of touched on this earlier, but go a little further. What did you feel like it answered the questions well, or was the question more interesting than the explanation, I guess?
For me?
Yeah.
The question was far more interesting than the, okay. than the explanation to me. Yeah, okay. For sure. I mean, this is one of those, movies where the reveal was not nearly as exciting as the setup, and the reveal is fine. The movie is mostly set up, so it's a very enjoyable watch, but I wasn't like thrilled beyond belief. No.
Okay. I think I'm kind of in the same boat. I was not enthused about, I don't know, by the time we actually got to the reveal on some of this stuff, I don't know that I was actually full on.
We're reviewing out. Hunter Killer, right?
Then you find out they're in a submarine and you're like, what? Oh,
spoiler alert.
Mind boggling. It's just Shyamalan level stuff right there. But we could have reviewed Hunter Killer this week. I just want to remind the listener that that was the movie that was on the schedule for this week. And I want to thank everybody for not making us do that. We really, really appreciate it. Cause good gracious, what a beating. I talked about that, Richard, I talked about that with our friends on Talk Sport. Well, that was one of the movies that I had that I was assigned this week was God, Hunter Killer. Just like, I don't know what to even say about this, cause it's a Gerard Butler movie, and you definitely know exactly what you're getting with the Gerard Butler movie. And it sure is, I'm sure. 86% liked it on the audience score. Just want to put that out there. Anyway.
Problem is the electorate.
Yeah.
That's of the people who chose to see it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it was just Gerard Butler and his family. And submarine enthusiasts, which I understand. I was, by the time we get to the answers of this whole thing, I'm with you, Richard. I don't think I was even asking myself those questions anymore. I was fully just here for the characters themselves, and I didn't really care so much about the setting. The setting is so cool in the outset once we kind of, you know, you see the cameras and the glass behind the, or the windows behind the mirror and things like that, I felt like it was kind of fill in the blanks for me. Like, I was like, okay, I kind of know where this is headed and what we're doing with this part. So
once you see Jerry Gergich, you know he's probably going to ruin everything.
I kind of figured.
Gross.
Is your name actually Larry? But I stopped asking those questions and was more, I think, on your side, Megan. At a certain point, it became less about answering the big unknowable questions and more about just like, when's Hemsworth getting here and how bananas is this going to get? But I did feel like there was this movie's 2 hours and 21 minutes long, and it should be it should be 2 hours on the nose, because there's about a 20 minute stretch by the time you kind of have all the information you really need. And there's some connect the dots on your own that you can kind of put together just from having seen movies, you know, that you could know, all right, I kind of know the bit with Jeff Bridges' character at this point. I kind of know where the Dakota Johnson, Kaylee Spaney thing is going. Like, I know these things. Let's get down to it now. And it's a little draggy in kind of the transition from the second act to the third act. But once Hemsworth shows up and it goes all in, I was big time into that conclusion. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just a banging final act for this movie.
Yeah. I think about the kind of like mystery box thing that you mentioned, like for me, I don't know if it was because the movie was so long, but it felt like pretty early on we had a good grasp on like why everyone was there and what brought everyone here, and then how this hotel worked. And I feel like the big kind of like, I mean, almost like the last reveal of like why this person's there is the like manager, the Lewis Pullman character. And I was like, I haven't been wondering about him. Like, I just assume that's his job. I'm not like, how did this guy end up at this hotel? Like, he's there to make money.
Right.
I thought that was kind of a strange thing. Cause like, I mean, you know, one of the first people you find out about is John Hamm, who's, you know, kind of like a undercover agent. And then immediately after that, I feel like we were like, okay. And then Jeff Bridges robbed a bank. And I was like, okay. So, and then Dakota Johnson has, you know, someone tied up. I think we got it now. That's why everyone's here.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was at too. It was a strange, you know, when you have Jeff Bridges and you have John Hamm and Chris Hemsworth and Dakota Johnson, if you're a Dakota Johnson fan, that's a pretty stellar foursome. And then really by the end of the movie, the main characters are Lewis Pullman and Cynthia Erivo, who was great. I loved her. I was mesmerized by her scenes. And this is her first movie. She's going to be in Widows in a couple weeks, which I'm excited about. But she was fantastic. And I felt
she was amazing.
Goodness. And I don't want to do the thing where we say, well, she was great, but she was backed up really well. But I feel like it has to be said, because we harp so much on movies where that are written and directed by men, and then the female characters are just giving the female actors, excuse me, are given just nothing to work with, and the characters become very two dimensional and unenjoyable. And we harp on that a lot. So I feel like I have to go the opposite route and say, I think Goddard did an incredible job of writing for her and giving her scenes in which it's not just like giving her good dialogue, it's really positioning her very, very well to be able to stay in scenes with Jeff Bridges, who is just an incredible guy to work off of. I feel like one of the best in the history of the business, of just two people in a room, like, who do you want to have across the table from you to work with? And that's, I feel like Jeff Bridges is very high on that list. So putting her that, and then the sequences in which she's singing are so great, and they really give her an opportunity to have like true, genuine presence on screen. And that's, gosh, that I think that helps. I would guess, knowing kind of some of her background, I feel like that probably helps her kind of get footing within this movie. And then prepares the audience for her to be just a, you know, just a presence throughout. And I loved her. I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, I think those two were such a fun pair together. Mm-hmm. And like my favorite scene by far is definitely when she's singing You Can't Hurry Love and he's ripping up the floorboards every yes. time she claps. Yes. Like that was the best. I was like, oh, I could watch this for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. Arby, either of those, the newcomers jump out at you as you know, the big pull away from this.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Carrie Spaney's great. And
I forgot her as well. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Kelly Spaney, I really enjoyed. She's got a lot of stuff coming up as well. But I, you know, this movie's very reliant on Lewis Pullman. You know that you know, and so that was like with this all-star cast, you're like, oh, okay, he's in a lot of this. But I mean, obviously, Manny Jacinto, you know, the Bortles God, I think really brought it home for me between him and Jerry Gergich.
Sure. It's perfect. That's the main thing we were looking for in this mm-hmm. movie, I feel like as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Throwing in those Bortles references in this seemed a place, but let's stand by it. No, I thought the young cast was great, but it's confusing when you have this huge, I mean, I like it on a lot of casts, but there's these huge presences and you're watching them really hold their own. And that's awesome. But it's like not always as advertised as I just feel like the trailers for this set up something very different than what it was. And what it was very good, just very mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I could definitely have watched a whole movie of just Jeff Bridges and Cynthia Erivo. I thought they had really good chemistry and the characters sung. I don't mean sing. That's a bad. They sorry.
I was bummed though. Her like a cappella versions of those songs, there's not on the soundtrack. Oh, I like looked sucks. On Spotify. I was like, that seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, definitely agree there. Her first. I don't remember the title of the song anymore because it's been a month since I've seen this movie. But her first song was Dynamite. Gosh,
when John Hamm's spying, I think it's like This Old Heart of Mine.
Yeah. Gosh, so good. She was good. Yeah, that should be on the soundtrack. That's a bummer that it's not. I would have honestly liked a little more of the Jeff Bridges background. I love heists and bank robberies, and especially this era of bank robbery. I don't know. There's something very cool about that, and the whole hide it in the floor and meet up later thing. I'm a sucker for that kind of story and all the scenes, the imagery that goes with that. I could have probably used a little more of that and a little, I don't know, even less.
I just think they tipped their hand on that so early. Like, yeah. And then I'd seen the clip in the trailer when he has the mask on and the money's flying. So mm-hmm. I was kind of waiting for that like extended scene, but you only really see the last cut of that. So I was like, oh, okay.
The opening scene with Offerman burying the money in the floorboards is it's kind of Coen-y. It's calling your shot and then swinging for the fences. And I'm not sure that quite. I think you're right, Megan. It kind of it tipped the hand a little bit, and it was an odd placement. In the moment, I loved it. I was super into it. Coming out afterwards, I think it would make
sense if that was like the main thing.
Sure,
but the second half is so Hemsworth that you're kind of like that. It seems like two kind of different things going on there.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Let's just jump ahead and get into Hemsworth time here, as we do every week here at Mad About Movies podcast. Number one, he's great. Meg, I don't know how far back your I don't know how far back your love for Hemsworth goes. I know for you and me, Richard, it's long. We've been on the Hemsworth train for a very long time. Yeah. I'm so thrilled when he does a movie like this. And Thor Ragnarok was kind of the same thing, where the first time I saw that guy, which I think was the Star Trek movie with Pine, mm-hmm. I was just like, that dude is a movie star. We don't make movie stars anymore, but freaking Australia does, because that guy's a movie star, and I want to buy all of the stock in his career. And then he just had a really odd post-Thor, pre-Ragonk, was just kind of, not even just up and down, was just kind of bad. He did just some odd choices, and I was bummed, and then Regonk redeemed that, I feel like, and this was another example where I was just like,
so great.
I was
right.
Rush. I forgot about Rush.
Rush, he's arguably like his best overall performance. Yeah, something like that.
Totally agree. Great, but this was like a reminder of like, yes, that dude is the movie star that we thought that he was, Richard. When he comes on screen, you're like, yep, here we go. This is my guy. This is what I was expecting from him 10 years ago or whatever. He's just so good. Megan, what's your background with Hemsworth, and how did that meet your expectation? We've talked a lot about expectation here. Was that sequence when he finally pops up, is that what you wanted it to be?
Okay, so I will admit I probably haven't been as strong on the Hemsworth train as others. I think because it's so easy to compare the Chris's, and I've been a big time Chris Pine fan for a long time. So, but I, like I said, I really liked Cabin in the Woods, and there was kind of a time around that era where, I mean, I wasn't as much into the first two Thors. There was a while where he was in like those Huntsman movies I didn't really see. And like In the Heart of the Sea, I remember a friend seeing and saying, it's fine that you don't have to see that. So, I was really looking forward to this. And I think, like you said, from Ragnarok, I'm not going to say Regonk.
I genuinely don't even know that it is Ragnarok anymore. Like it's just,
that's fair. Regonk, you're so in the bit.
I apologize.
I've been kind of reevaluating. and so I was just so looking forward to this, and you know, you get some quick clips of him, but the second he shows up in the rain at the hotel and he's just kind of like, you know that it's all about, like, it's about to go down, and he's just like smiling, and he's like, just so thrilled to be here. I was just, I was like, oh yes, this is it. It's time. I'm ready. You can do no wrong. And then when he's dancing, it's like way too long of a clip. And I was like, more. Yeah. He's insane.
Yeah. I was reading about this. I read an interview with Goddard, I think in Hollywood Reporter, when this opened in, I don't know, one of the film festivals, TIFF maybe. And he talked a lot about getting this cast, number one, and getting them to work at significantly less than what they typically get, just rate wise. Cause his selling point to Hamm and Bridges and the rest was, we got to do this under budget, which they did. This is a very low budget effort considering everything that is at play here. But his thinking process on that was like, if we get this done at a low cost and keep it under budget, they'll let us do kind of whatever we want to do. And $32 million was the budget on this whole thing. So he got all these actors to come in significantly beneath what they typically get, which was great. I think that's very interesting. But he talked about that scene where he's doing the dance, and that's one take. That's a one off. You know, read the script, come back. I believe he said in the script it just says like whatever the character's name is. I'm just gonna call him Chris Hemsworth. Like Billy Lee, probably. Yeah, mm-hmm. Billy Lee.
Yeah.
Billy Lee dances is what it says in the script. And Hemsworth's like, I don't really know what you want me to do here. And Goddard said he just said, you know, come back tomorrow ready to go. And he just did that. And which is incredible.
Mesmerizing.
The thing is, he's beautiful. He is beautiful. He's just he looks like Thor. He's just a gorgeous human specimen. This character is very menacing and dangerous and deadly, and he's using that beauty as his. That's what he's selling. Is that
siren song?
Yeah, exactly, thing, yeah. Exactly. And that's what you know. That's what makes him part of what makes him dangerous, and he carries that so well. And that scene, you're right, Meg. I saw your tweet about this, Megan, before I saw the movie. Well, before I saw the movie, and I think you were spot on because it just was like. To see it feels like it's 4.5 minutes of him dancing,
yeah,
and that's way too long, but it's very oddly satisfying. I don't know, it just fit the moment, and it's very confusing and distressing in a lot of ways, and gosh,
yeah, it's really stressful.
Yeah, and it just kind of sums up his whole his whole bit. I mean, the whole character and the persona and everything. And it's just, gosh, it's so cool. But yeah, that's a one take. Just did this thing, and I think afterwards, Hemsworth was like, what the crap did I just do? I don't know. And Goddard was like, no, that's it, man. That's what we're
perfect.
That's what we're going with here. Yeah, Richard,
did you guys see?
Yeah, go ahead.
Question: did you guys see Mandy this year?
I have not. I'm not a Nicolas Cage guy. Richard, have you seen this yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, so there's like a cult leader in Mandy, and I remember being like, this guy's a loser. Like, who would ever join that cult? And then I saw this, I'm like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, this is, if Chris Hemsworth started a cult tomorrow, I'm not saying I'd join, but I'd get the brochure, at least.
Yeah, I'd read the literature. All right, cool.
Right. This makes sense. Yeah, I can see it. I understand.
So is this space-oriented or sex-oriented? I don't care. I just need to know which one it is.
I want to prepare appropriately.
Yeah.
Richard, that last scene, was the build-up worth it for you when we finally get Billy Lee walking in and all that comes out of that? Did you feel like that brought things together, or did it kind of, again, leave things hanging a little bit?
No, the resolution did not leave anything hanging for me. It was just like, oh, all right, that's how it ends. You know what I mean? Okay. I wasn't left wanting, but it was just, the build was so cool. I'm sitting there kind of rubbing my hands going, oh, this might be really awesome, however this ends. And then it was just like, it was very good how it ended, which is fine. That's acceptable.
Sure.
I'll tolerate. Very good, but it wasn't. Yeah, but it all came together fine for me.
Okay.
What about you?
Yeah, no, I loved the final sequence. The only elements that I wasn't super enthused about is we kind of touched on it, but like, you know, the Lewis Pullman character is interesting in a super side character kind of way, but exactly. It felt like Goddard cared more about that character than I did, and so pushing him to the forefront at the end was a choice. I don't know that I would not say that it was necessarily the wrong choice, but that was I wasn't so invested in that character that I needed him to be, you know, sort of the savior in some ways. And the tape thing, I thought that was a cool plot point and a cool MacGuffin, and making it ambiguous as to what exactly was on the tape, I thought was, I mean, I, you know, you can take an educated guess, but I thought it was kind of cool, but it felt like there was a little more focus on that than the movie had really built for me. And I don't know that it took anything away from it, but it was just like every scene that was just talking about this tape or featuring the bellhop was kind of like, well, but Jeff Bridges is right there and Chris Hemsworth's dancing, and I can kind of get back to those things. But I loved the entire sequence and the set building or world building almost that went into bringing that to fruition, and having the Rose character just being a complete nut job behind the sequence, you know, kind of in the background was fun and gave a little bit of creepy ambiance when that was already a pretty heavy player in the scene. And I thought the kind of the back and forth between Hemsworth and Bridges, and then when they bring in Cynthia Erivo's character into that, their back and forth was incredible acting on all three of their parts, but was very touching in a way that I didn't expect. Like the relationship between Bridges and Erivo really comes to a head in those moments. And there's real gravitas and power in the three of them just kind of going back and forth with I think very, very well written dialogue that brought that scene to a head for me quite well.
Yeah. And you totally buy it from Bridges, like he's just so great, because you're like, we've only seen, I mean, like in theory they've only been together for a few hours, you know, but you know, we know it's been a crazy few hours, and he really does, like, I'm like, in this moment he's bringing it, like you said.
He'll phone him in on you, but when he brings it, there's not many people better than Mr. Bridges. But he will, especially RIPD. That's Pete Bridges.
It's funny. He he kind of, in some ways, when he did Crazy Heart, I guess it was Iron Man was really before that, was before that, so maybe it was that, but that was such a revelation to me, because I'll be honest, I kind of have forgotten because of, you know, how old we are, I'd kind of forgotten Jeff Bridges when Crazy Heart came out, because he didn't really do a whole lot between Lebowski and, I guess, Iron Man, and even, I don't know, Lebowski to maybe, I don't know, maybe the Fisher King, you know, like he's been in this business for so long and done so much great work, but he kind of missed our generation when we were, when you and I, Richard, at least were teenagers and like kind of forming our film, I don't know, understandings and whatnot. And then besides Lebowski, obviously, and then Crazy Heart is just such a huge reminder of like, oh, dude, Jeff Bridges is incredible. Like, I kind of just didn't know that or had forgotten it or whatever. And then what we've seen over the last few years with True Grit and Hell or High Water and this and stuff, he's just so good. And he's so good to work off of. I think that truly, I think that might be his greatest skill, is just what a perfect acting partner he is. When he's, you know, when you're in a scene with him or in the room with him, mm-hmm. it's just outstanding. Anyway, I loved the ending. I thought it really brought everything together. I'm
really brought the room together.
yeah, literally in a pile. I thought maybe the stroke of genius for Goddard, at least on the writing directing standpoint, was the way in which we built to Chris Hemsworth showing up without really, really, really pointing at it or making it obvious, mm-hmm. and being, you know, over the top and heavy handed with it. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
But totally knew it was coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's partly the trailer again, but I think it's the story writing kind of leads you to that. And I always love when a writer director, trust the audience to be smart. I love mm-hmm. that. And it's something that doesn't get done, enough for me, but love that. Thought it was really fun. Little ups and downs here and there, but overall, I thought it was a very, very good movie that, I think will be fun to rewatch. I don't know that it's going to be like, I watch this twice a year type movie, but two or three or four years down the road, this is going to pop up on HBO or something. I'm like, yeah, I'll watch that again. And I think I'll, very much enjoy it again. It's got some rewatchability to it.
Yeah. I kind of want to rewatch it just because I feel like, especially with the Lewis Pullman stuff, I wasn't really paying attention to him in the beginning.
Sure.
So when there was kind of that reveal, I was like, well, that seems convenient. But then after the fact, I was like, well, there's all this stuff like kind of pointing to him having, you know, a past that you were just ignoring. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I probably need to double check me on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Any closing thoughts from y'all, or do y'all want to jump to grades here?
Sick grades, for me at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
RB, lead us off.
I'm going to go with a solid B+. Really enjoyed it. Like you said, Brian, it may get better with a rewatch, and I'm excited for that. But just first experience to a solid B+. There's a little downtime. It's too long, which is my complaint on all movies because I'm a 90-year-old man. But I still enjoyed most of it, in about 85 to 89% of it. So thus B+ seems fitting. Sure. Megan, what about you?
I'll go A- because I think the next time I watch it, I'll enjoy it more because I won't have the kind of looming aspect of my expectations over it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think it's going to be an A-.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go A- and a fairly high A-. I really enjoyed the storytelling. Gosh, I love this cast. Love when Hemsworth. The set design is awesome. We didn't talk mm-hmm. enough about the camera work. Really, really cool use of the camera and the colors and the contrast and stuff. And
the two-way mirrors are so fun. There's
Totally. But I feel like this is a great example too on the camera side of things. This is what I wish Kent was here to talk about more than anything else, because he really gets this stuff better than I do. But this is a very good example of you can make a dark movie with dark themes and camera, you know, colors and contrast that match that, without it just being bland and blank and so dark that you can't see what's going on, you know, which I just feel like is, I don't know, like every movie these days feels like I'm gonna be the old man now, Richard, and go these days, but
yeah, it's just my too, corner, it's too, and my lot.
It's just too
it's a corner lot.
Too common to like, well, we're doing a, you know, the themes are very dark and gritty, so we've got to make sure that no one will be able to see what's happening on screen. We're gonna have to make sure that it's very gray and dark and fitting that. And this was a, I love the color pops and the use of the neon and times and the jukebox and things like that. I think that, gosh, that may be the best stroke of Goddard's just direction here, is not making it so bland and its contrast, but really good stuff all around. And I think is a movie people should go out and see. It didn't make a lot of money. I don't know that it's ever going to make a lot of money, but go out and see it and check it out, because I think it's worth talking about, enjoyable, and might have a place on back end of top 10 lists at the end of the year. So good grades from us pretty much all around. Let's step over to the other side of the Mad About Movies Lounge and do some weekly recommends.
Weekly recommends.
All right, Megan, you are our guest, so you get to lead us off. What is your weekly recommend?
Okay, so I was trying to decide between a few, but I settled on. So recently there was, in like 2016, I think, a short film called Thunder Road. And so by Jim Cummings. And yeah. I was obsessed
song
with the
of all
short.
Time.
Oh my gosh. It's a great song. And it's kind of, that short has kind of taken over that song for me too.
Oh, yeah.
In a way where
I'm not
I
a
really,
beauty, but hey, I'm all right.
Oh my gosh. It kills me. It's so funny, but it's also like so sad. Mm-hmm. Like I've watched it and I've cracked up, and I've also watched it and just like been completely ruined for this man, and the premise is he's delivering a eulogy to his mother, and he just kind of has a full mental breakdown that involves a choreographed song and dance to Bruce Springsteen's Thunder Road. just recently, I think the full version, he managed to kind of pull together, and it's an indie film, but it's on, I think, like iTunes and stuff. And so he did a full movie based on this like character and premise, and he's the writer and star, and he used to be on like College Humor and has kind of gone into doing some weird stuff, and it's just like very much my humor, and I love all of it.
Nice.
That's what I recommend.
Very nice.
Watch the short and the full thing.
Yeah. And the song, man. What a classic.
Yeah. And just listen to the song. I'm sure no one's ever
and
heard of
burned
that.
Out, and burned out frames of burned out Chevrolet is one of the greatest poetic lyric lines of rock and roll.
And you know,
I think
Bruce Springsteen really needs like the exposure. You know, like,
good
is anyone
him.
Listening
good
to that guy?
Little indie band.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. The E Street Indies. I wrote a paper in college on Thunder Road. It was the best paper I ever wrote. I was reading some English class, and we were talking about this is actually really funny. Just cool happenstance. There's some play, some like William Inge play, and I was and just going through it, and I raised my hand. It's like, this is basically the plot of Thunder Road, because it's like, dude comes in, has a cool car, picks up girl, and says, let's blow out of this crappy town and build a life together, which is, by the way, also the plot of every Bruce Springsteen song. It's still about 1982.
You forgot to count
which is,
it
it's a great
though.
Plot.
That's the problem.
Yeah, it's the same plot. Rosary. Yeah. That was the paper. This place, the guy was like, the professor was like, wow, it is. And then he asked me to stay after class. And he goes, I can't tell you a story. He goes, when I was in high school, it was 1974 or something. And I was in Buffalo, New York. And Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band came to town on their tour. They started their summer tour in Buffalo, New York. And I went and saw them. And they were really good. It's a really good show. I really enjoyed it. And then the whole summer passed. And I went to college. And I went to college at UCLA. So I moved across the country from Buffalo, New York to Westwood, to LA. And I was starting class. And it was now September. And a bunch of my friends said, we're going to go see this band called Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. They're now in LA, working their way across the country, you know, like you used to have to do. And he goes, oh, yeah, I saw them in Buffalo in May. They were really good. They were good. I'll go see them with you guys again. And he goes, and I went and saw them, and they were the best band in the world. He was like, somewhere in that summer, like one of those cool stories where they like they figured it out over those 3 months. He got to see both ends of it. He goes, you should write a paper about this play in Thunder Road. And I, it was all right. And he gave you like 140 out of 100. Always cater to the light guy with the Bruce stuff.
Yeah.
Always going to win. So
I love it. I love it. Great recommend. That's been, I've seen that, making the rounds on the old movie sphere, blogosphere. So I'm excited. I'll check that. I'll definitely check that out. Richard, what's your recommend besides Thunder Road, the song?
Yeah, and Manifest, as always. Right. Standing recommend Manifest, but I'm going to go on Netflix Thursday. It's the weirdest thing ever, and every headline's great.
I'm so everyone excited for this, man. Gosh.
Every joke is so good. Is Adam Sandler funny again? And it's Adam Sandler 100% Fresh, his new stand-up special. And if you grew up on Adam Sandler comedy CDs, not the movies, CDs, Stan and Judy's Kid, and What the Heck Happened to Me, and all that's What's My Name. It's basically a visual version of these CDs. It's super foul and it's super immature, but it's super self-aware. It's basically like a MacGruber stand-up special. And also at the end, you will cry. I cried at the end of it. So Megan's talking. He does a tribute to someone. I won't even spoil. Nice. Two tributes in a row. Both are equally really, really sweet in a way that, you know, Sandler's good at two things really as an actor. And it's like being angry and being tender. And those two things equate. And then you add in the humor and it's funny and sweet and all that. But it's a really, it's kind of, Brian, it's like a Bo Burnham special. It kind of reinvents the form in a weird way.
Nice.
And it's super, it's shot very interestingly, and it's really stupid in parts. And, but it's like when Sandler was smart about being stupid instead of being don't mess with the Zohan stupid, you know? And, it's a great special. I was like, it's the shock of the year. It's one of my favorite things I've watched all year. And I'm right in the wheelhouse cause I'm the right age for all that. So maybe it's a lot of it's nostalgia for super crass 13-year-old comedy. And that may be true, but I watched it because I read like two good reviews, ready to turn it off at about 5:30 in the morning. And I turned it on and was like, I'm going to watch 5 minutes of this and get two giggles out. And I watched it all the way through and I almost missed work at 7 o'clock in the morning because I was, so yeah, it's great.
Awesome. I'm excited to, I may go watch that later. Richard, I don't think we've ever talked about it on the air, but we've talked multiple times about just those CDs and how, or those albums and how at least every male, and I don't mean to be sexist at all, but I know every male our age listened to those albums over and over and over again. I listened to What the Heck Happened to Me. I guarantee I listened to that as a preteen and teenager, whenever that came out, more than any
music,
any CD that came out during like the peak of CDs. I guarantee I listened to that more than any, and maybe all of them combined. It's just like all the time.
Wrote for Vice or Vox or something. I sent it to you, Brian. I had a great line that was like, I haven't thought about Adam Sandler in 15 years as a relevant cultural figure, but I remember where I was the first time I heard the buffoon sketch more than I remember where I was during 9/11.
Yeah, it's incredible. So I may if I get time, I may go back and watch that tonight because I would love. We have said so many times in the show. I would love for Adam Sandler to be good and relevant and funny again. And I wish that upon him. So I'm excited to watch this. My recommend is an album and a band that Kit actually recommended on the School of Rock throwback episode that we did a few weeks ago. We were talking about the state of rock and roll and music and all that stuff, and really fun conversation to have with you guys. And I kind of said, like, I don't feel like there is rock and roll anymore. I don't even know what to you know what.
And band. He recommended a little band called Forever the 60s.
Yeah, and they're awesome. Them and LMFAO is the only two things he's ever. No, but Kit, well,
both bands feature Kent.
Yeah, they're both his bands. I really hope that he can patch things up with Red Foo eventually. That's my goal.
Nah, dude. Sexual assault is sexual assault, dude. There's no coming.
But he recommended a band to me called Pine Grove. He recommended another band, a couple others as well, but this was the one that I started listening to the next day, and I was like, oh, this is solid. I'm enjoying this. And then I found myself the next day being like, I think I'm going to listen to that again. And 3 or 4 days had gone by and I downloaded the music and just super in. So the band is Pine Grove. The album that I really have been jamming to, which is a very antiquated old thing to say, but the album that I have been very much enjoying is called Cardinal. It's a short.
Cardinal's like, the best one.
It's so good. It's like eight songs so long, little short EP, or I guess a short LP, really, but it's so good. And has two of the best rock and roll songs that I've heard in years. And so I think this album came out like 2 or 3 years ago, so it's not new. They have a third album that just came out I haven't checked out yet. Again, band is Pine Grove. The album is Cardinal. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I've listened to it over and over and over again, and I need to personally thank Kent with a hug, as I am known to do. But definitely check that out. It's very, very good.
When Cardinal came out, I had a friend who wanted to go see them live, and they were playing like a few towns over, and I'd never heard them, and we drove, and that's all we listened to on the way there. And by the time I got to the show, I'm like, I am the biggest fan. I'm buying a t-shirt.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's really
good. Same thing happened with Brian and I with Sam Smith.
Right. How dare you. God, I hate Sam Smith. That's for another time. Regardless, if you are like me and have missed the rock and the roll, I love it. It's very non-traditional rock and roll, but very, very good, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. So check that out, and if you've heard the third album already, let me know, and I'm excited to get into that soon. So those are our weekly recommends. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, Skylight, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We will be back next week, I believe, with Bohemian Rhapsody, so get ready for that. But Richard, if I was mm-hmm. looking for you on the internet, where might I find you?
You can find me at Richard Barden on all the social media. You can find me at the Bad About Movies podcast newsletter, which will be out in November. We've got a special issue coming, and you can find me on the VIP feed, which we have a VIP briefing coming out this week. If you're a VIP, look out for that in your inbox. Brian, where can I find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at bgill12. You can find my writing as well at madaboutmoviespodcast.com and the aforementioned Mad About Movies podcast newsletter. You can find our show on all the social medias. You can find us on Facebook by searching Mad About Movies. You can find us on Twitter at Mad About Movies. You can find us on Instagram at Mad About Movies podcast. Please follow us and join in the conversation at all those places. And if you
give us a good review on the iTunes.
Yeah, we need those old iTunes reviews. We're going to push that hard soon to all you people to make that happen. But yeah, if you like what you've heard, subscribe and then give us a rating. And if you really like what you've heard, you mentioned it, Richard, but you can find us our VIP feed at madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. You can sign up there for as little as $1 a week for all kinds of throwbacks and bonus content and fun conversations that we have over at our Patreon.
Can I give a tip to the listener?
Yeah, of course.
If you're going to be a VIP, but you're like, look, it's not in my budget to be a VIP all year because it's like it's money that I want to spend on, I don't know, fireworks and, MD 2020 or something. But if you're going to be, so you're like, let's say you got 3 months of VIP budget in you, do it now, do it as we go up to Oscar season. Cause these are going to be a lot of good throwbacks,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
a lot of good bonus content. We'll throw up a lot of good stuff. So if you're not going to be a year long VIP, we get it, man. There's a ton of stuff to spend money on this world. Don't spend it always on us. We obviously appreciate those of you that stay with us all year, but if you're going to just lock in for a few months, this is the time to do it. Cause the shows, this feed and the VIP feed are about to get lit.
Yeah. Things are about to take off for us in some ways too. So you want to be there, I think. Megan, where can we find you?
Yes, so I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd at SpellMegan, and then I also have a website at meganspell.com, and so our podcast is on that website as well, and I tweet about it a lot.
Dope. Thank you so much. And Megan will be in our newsletter this month as well. She's contributed a few times, and she's going to be back this coming month. I'm excited about that as well. Again, thank you so much for listening, and tune in to that VIP page, and really appreciate you guys being here. Until next time, we will see you at the cinema. Goodbye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with
those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.